Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, Naomi Ekperigin, Tien Tran, and Michaela Watkins join me in studio to talk confidence. Who has it, who doesn't, and how women can help each other feel a little less like shit all the time. We've also got America's soulmate Alyssa Mastromonaco joining for the news you can uterus, I mean use. And finally, a very lively Hills Will Die On. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. First, before we get started, a little bit of housekeeping. If you have a hill you'll die on that you would like to submit to us for a possible play on the show, you can record a 30-second voice memo and send it to hysteria@crooked.com. You can also get in touch with us via that email address if you have anything else you want to say. Just so you know, Caroline checks it and I check it, and there's a few other people at Crooked that can see it. So, you know, don't send Caroline love notes that you wouldn't want me to read to. Well, Alyssa, you know, you and I were texting this morning before we started recording, and I was thinking about how, you know, the news kind of feels like the automatic pilot system on a Boeing Air Max 737. Every time I feel like my nose is starting to go up and things are starting to look up, something overrides it and tries to make me dive straight into the ground.
Right? Something that only one person in America has been trained to know how to override the override.
Right. And nobody knows what they're doing. And I constantly feel like I'm on the verge of crashing, especially when weeks of news seem kind of like bummers.
Yeah. This has been like a relay race of garbage dumpster news.
Yeah. We're handing the baton, but the baton is a dirty diaper.
And it's on fire.
This is great. We're coming up with so many good metaphors this morning. It is bad, but, you know, I try to remind myself that, A, things are bad and things are good. You know, things are never, ever going to always be good or always be bad. So whatever state we're in right now, however bad and dumb and inescapable it feels, it's not always going to feel this way. For now, we kind of have to tackle some unpleasant realities. And first thing I want to talk about is Trump declaring the Republican Party. Well, he said that the Republican Party would be the party of healthcare. But in reality, I know, party of health, sounds like a lame-ass party. I would leave. I would have one drink at that party and be like, okay, bye. And I wouldn't even say bye to everybody. I would just say bye to the person who invited me and peace out. That's me leaving the Republican healthcare party. But one of the things that really bothers me about the Republican attempt to claim healthcare as a pet issue for them is that they're constantly trying to segregate women's health from healthcare, and women are people. So it feels a little bit like a dodge to me. First, I want to talk a little bit about what Mike Pompeo did this week. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced cuts to funding for the Organization of American States, a leading organization promoting unity between North and South America, over the organization's advocacy for reproductive rights. Now, TLDR, this is basically an expansion of the global gag rule, which doesn't allow U.S. money to fund organizations that in any way mention abortion. So there's that. Second thing is, this week, Trump officials attended a Hungarian conference to promote women having more babies.
This was really something.
Yeah. What did you think about this, Alyssa?
I mean, this goes to my theory. Like, you know, I think I wonder to myself all the time, like, what the fuck they do all day? Well, I guess this is a window into how they spend their time. It's like, first of all, the prime minister, do you say his name? Orban?
Viktor Orban, like, yeah.
Viktor Orban is this like right-wing lunatic, right? So I love that those are the people we're making time for. You know, and the other thing about this event that they did at the Library of Congress, that was literally just anti-choice activists at the Library of Congress, sponsored by the Hungarian embassy.
But they hate libraries. They hate learning. Why would they want to be around books?
It's a venue in D.C. You know, it's like, I guess that's all there is to it. And they called it the Make Families Great Again Conference. So one, I love that the only way to make families great again is to force them to have more children. But also, at what point is something going to happen so that he stops using political slogans for all of his official events. It's bunkers. It's bunkers. It's a small little thing, but it just gets up my crack every day.
I mean, Trump is a living brand and he's nothing if not a brand. And so everything he does must brand. He's like a shark that has to swim constantly. Otherwise he ceases to exist. He must always be branding. Okay. Third item in the uterus news beat.
You know what? Well, we thought we were going to be able to put this beat on the shelf after Kavanaugh, but
I know.
It seems like it's going to be with us for the long haul.
I know. I was reading about this and I was thinking, Alyssa, they're going to be harping on this until the day I die. I am going to spend my entire life being like, guys, birth control isn't the same as abortion. Abortion isn't the same as murder. A fertilized egg isn't the same as a 15-year-old girl. Like, ah. So yeah, let's take a quick trip to Georgia.
Ah,
beautiful
Peach State.
Peach State, beautiful state, wonderful people there. Stacey Abrams is from Georgia. There's a lot of good things about Georgia. One of the things about Georgia that isn't good is House Bill 481, which passed the state Senate this week. If it passes the House and goes to Governor Brian Kemp, the man who basically cheated his way into being governor. The bill would outlaw abortion once a heartbeat is detected. Now, the problem with that is that a heartbeat is usually detectable about 6 weeks into a pregnancy, which means that you would be about 2 weeks late for your period. You would have about 2 weeks to immediately realize, oh, I'm pregnant. Now, that's what George is trying to do.
And be clear, that is if you are someone who is regular like a clock.
Exactly.
If you were me prior to the NuvaRing, I mean, it could be 6 weeks. You'd be like, yeah, it's about normal.
Well, and that's another thing is some forms of birth control give women irregular periods. Like I have an IUD that's hormonal. And so, hello, everybody wanted to know about what's going on inside of my body. But this is just...
And my body.
Yeah. It makes women, a lot of people who use it have irregular menstruation. So if for some reason mine were to fail and I was like 3 weeks late for a period, I would never be like, oh, I think I'm pregnant. I would just be like, that's my crazy old IUD messing with my hormones.
There it goes again.
Right. But for women in Georgia, if this bill were to become law, they wouldn't They would be SOL. They would have to go to another state to have an abortion. And Georgia is not located near a lot of places that are very hospitable to abortion. So it would be
certainly not Alabama.
No, it would be at great personal expense. It would take a lot of time. And it shouldn't, because it is a medical procedure that is guaranteed by the Constitution. There have been multiple Supreme Court rulings that have guaranteed the right to access to abortion for American women and other people who have uteruses. So why do you think they keep trying this?
Well, you know, it's sort of like, look, we're cruising into 2020 at a very slow but real pace, and they need something. Like, there are so many reasons, none of which are good or authentic, but they need something to get people fired up. And right now, you know, Donald Trump's trying to kill healthcare and be like, we're going to kill your healthcare and give you something better. No, you're not, because you're literally not smart enough to have come up with anything. And this is just another trick. So it's like, it's all this like post, you know, it was like both pre-Mueller and post-Mueller. Like pre-Mueller, he didn't get his wall. So he's like, okay, we're cool with putting kids in cages and treating life that way, but we're going to put a pin in that. And we're going to double down on how Democrats want to kill babies. And we're going to get everyone all fired up that the reason that even if I did collude with Russia, even if I did do that, that like, at least I'm going to save all the babies. And then like the Mueller report comes out. And instead of just being like, wow, I fucking dodged a bullet, I'm going to be quiet. Now they're like doubling down on all of their, you know, repro, everyone's killing, all the Democrats want to kill the babies. And I think that that states like Georgia, I mean, look, Georgia has not, despite the real inroads that Stacey made, Georgia's not blue. And this is their way of being like, because whenever anyone, the argument is so hard, you and I know it, like abortion should be safe and legal. It's a choice. It's like, I'm not even going to go there, but they want us whenever we have to be the ones defending abortion. It always sounds hard. It isn't hard. We believe it. We know it's right. There's science behind it. But, you know, if you're in Georgia and they say, No, but really, why would you need, shouldn't you, like, if you got, their whole theory, I think, is that, like, if you got raped, which is kind of the only reason they think you should be allowed to have an abortion, well, you'd know it right then and there, and you should handle it right then and there. So there really is no other reason, therefore, defend. Do you see what I'm saying? That's
right.
Not the most articulate point, but you see where I'm going.
Yeah, I see where you're going. I think that it's a really important fundraising tool for Republicans. And if abortion were actually outlawed, they would lose that fundraising tool. And so they need to harp on it by passing laws that are a huge waste of time and money. And that, but that will get people to open up their wallets.
And the other thing too, yes, is that while all of this, look, like there are a lot of hearts and minds clearly that haven't been changed over the years about a woman's right to choose what happens in her body, right? But with all of the hot trash garbage that's happening in the world, and the fact that the news is, you know, from six, if you look at the 6 to 6:30 hour, 90% of it's probably things that Trump have done. So without, and I'm not giving us all this credit, but without people like us harping on this, it's flying under the radar. Mm-hmm. This is the perfect moment if you're a Republican and you want to try to get this shit done to do it, because Democrats are spread so thin trying to fight so many wars on so many fronts that this is, it's kind of like their ideal and the most opportune moment.
Yeah. Healthcare was the most important issue in the 2018 midterm elections and the Democratic spanking that was handed out. It was the most important issue to voters then. And I believe going into 2020 will continue to be the most important issue. And I think as women, as people who care about women's issues, as people who care about women's healthcare, it's important for us to hang on white knuckled to issues like abortion, contraception, birth control, reproductive health care, the entire range of services that women and people with uteruses would need, because we can't allow those things to be separated. It is healthcare. Women's healthcare is healthcare. And going into 2020, we need to keep talking about that, because people care more about healthcare than they do about whether or not Don Jr. is getting indicted, even though that would have been awesome.
It would have been the cherry on the sundae. But no, that's why, like, even when you and I talk about what we're going to talk about, and we're just like, God, I guess it's another week of Uterus Weekly. Like, we're not going to stop.
No.
We may get down. We may get mad. We may be sad. Okay. All those ad words. But we're not going to stop. They can't stop us.
No.
We can get tired. We may need to do some self-care and maybe, you know, wash our hair, which is my self-care today. But like, we're not, you can't fucking stop us. Fuck you.
Yeah. Rewire News, rewire.news is a resource that I use a lot. And they have a legislation tracker and it tells you exactly where different laws are. And it gets depressing to get lost in, but it's really good if you just want to have an idea of what's matriculating through the system. So if you guys are listening and you're interested in that, I would recommend checking out Rewire.
I agree with that. Also, I would follow the Twitter feed of Elise Hoag. Elise is the president of NARAL, and she understands a lot of times, because I text her when I'm like, yo, can you break this down for the ladies? Because this is very complicated. And she does it. And she has an army behind her, but she also is just on the front lines every day and she needs our support.
And Alyssa, I am sorry that this is the end of our talk, because I'm just now getting fired up and I want to keep yelling about abortion with you. We will talk to you next week, Alyssa.
All right. Till next week.
Bye.
Bye.
We have to take a break, but when we're back, there'll be more hysteria.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is Brian Tyler Cohen, host of the No Lie podcast, which is part of Crooked Media. You've likely seen my videos online or watched me torture Tommy Vitor as part of our series on YouTube. But this week, I've got a really exciting episode. I'm interviewing the 44th president of the United States, Barack Obama. So if you want to tune in and hear what he's got to say, including a definitive answer as to whether or not aliens are real, make sure to listen by searching for No Lie with Brian Tyler Cohen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And we're back with more hysteria, personal, political. Today, we're going to talk about confidence and why we can't fucking get confident. Mm. Why, you stupid fucking bitches, why can't you get more confident? I've got three wonderful women in the room with me. First, I'm going to start with actor, comedian, and lesbian sidekick, Tian Tran. The reason I said that is not because I view Tian in any way as a sidekick.
Thank
to anybody.
You. I'm a leading lesbian.
You've been auditioning, and it seems like a lot of the parts fit one mold.
Fit one mold. The lines that I keep getting are essentially the guy will have a problem with a woman, and I, the lesbian sidekick, will come up and be like, chicks are crazy. They've got daddy issues. That's another line. Another line I've had is, they keep saying chicks, which I absolutely...
Right. It's a 1980.
It's a 1980, and I also hate that. But there was another line that was like, you know, chicks really care about hair care, so you need to be, like, taken care of up here and down here.
Oh, my God. Oh. Is the down here, like, the dick area?
Yeah. And I'm like, why am I sharing that with you?
Oh, my God. Well, Ken, welcome. You're never going to be a sidekick in my heart
or in my
mind. Second, we have actor, comedian, and floral print wearer.
Oh.
And host of the podcast Couples Therapy. Naomi Ekparagon.
Hey, girl. Hey.
You're so bright and cheerful this morning.
I woke up over an hour before I had to be here, and that is huge. I like to give myself 40 minutes, and that includes a shower. So usually by the time I come in, I am serving all sorts of surliness. But today, up with the sun. How exciting.
We're delighted. I'm delighted.
Yeah.
I could not be more delighted. And last but not least, we have working actor.
Oh, yeah.
Working actor. No, making
sorry.
The jerk off.
Did I make it weird? Did I make it weird by getting a job, guys?
Michaela Watkins. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I haven't gone to bed yet. No, I'm fine. I feel like I haven't gone to bed yet. I don't know why. I just stayed up all night getting really mad at the world. That was fun. So, yeah.
No social media after 9 p.m.
Is that your rule?
I know. I do crossword puzzles.
Okay.
Weird crossword. But anybody do the New York Times app where you do the, you know, I do the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday ones because they make me feel good about myself. And somebody else put the puzzle together because the Wednesday felt like a Friday on steroids.
Oh, no.
Maybe it's a conspiracy. They just want you to feel... They're like, you know what? We have a slice of our audience that is reasonably intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to be taken down some pegs this week. We're going to make them suffer. Let's go into our topic for today.
Woo.
Confidence.
Confidence.
With three actors.
Oh, God.
Yeah, during
it's a roller coaster. Oh, my
God. So, guys, how much like shit do you feel all the time? How many times a day does somebody make you feel like nothing? Let's go into that. One of the things I want to talk about is the kind of disparity between women and men and the way that they're confident and whether or not confidence just on its face is something good. Naomi and I were emailing back and forth about an example of confidence just run amok. And that was the case of Elizabeth Holmes, who is also Tian's favorite.
Oh, my God. I'm obsessed.
What?
So let's solve it today. Let's solve it like we solve everything.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's figure out how do women cross the confidence gap with men? Do we want to cross the confidence gap? And if we don't want to...
No, keep us small. Keep us small.
Well, or do we want to just, like, drag men down with us? And so everybody's a little bit of a mess all the time.
Mm.
What is the solution? Confidence.
Oh, I do like the idea that we're all a little bit of a mess. That just does feel like it creates a lot of safe spaces, a lot of group hugging. But no, most certainly, we have to close the confidence gap, and women have to be more confident, especially because of that idea that, you know, it's usually people who are less competent who tend to be more confident in their ability to do a given thing, not less confident in general, but like someone who like knows the least about a subject will be like, I'm probably pretty good at this. But that's, and so I'm like, oh, okay, well, we got to actually have confidence when we do know what we're doing or have studied something hard or have put hours into improving. And yet we don't, because doesn't it feel like, I don't know, I feel like it was because I definitely learned from an early age that I had to be better than everybody. Like being a black kid who went to white schools, and my mom was very like, okay, they don't, no one is looking out for you and no one wants you there. So you have to prove you deserve to be there at every turn. Well, that's a lot of pressure when you're 10 and your breasts are budding. You know what I mean? And I think that carries over into adulthood. Definitely.
Right. I think it's, it, like you brought up, Naomi, I think it's definitely a gender thing, but it's also a race thing. And it's a, it depends on how much money you have and where you're living, and where you're going to school. And also you brought up an important point. Breasts budding,
which is huge, by the way. Because for me, I just, I didn't want anybody to look at me. So that's when the shoulder shrug started to happen. And I started to cave and get, and try to be as tiny and invisible as humanly possible at a really important age.
Yeah.
Well, anytime anything is changing with you physically, that makes people less confident. And there have been studies that have found that girls before they're about 12 are about as confident as little boys. But then once they hit 12 and once the boobs start coming and things start changing, then they all of a sudden fall off, which is really a shame. I think, Tian, did you experience adolescence as a time when confidence was shaken?
Oh, yes. Like, are you asking, like, if I was a confident, like, kid?
Yeah.
Oh, I wasn't. I found a lot of confidence. I was a jock, and I played soccer.
That's why you're cool.
And I,
and you have wonderful posture.
Thank you. My mother would say I do not have good posture, but thank you.
Well, I found. I hope she's listening,
Mom. Michaela said I have good posture. I found confidence in soccer because it was like a team environment, and like we were all these like women kind of like empowering each other, and that felt really good. But outside of the soccer team, I was still in the mindset that I needed to get attention from boys, which is where I was finding all of my self-worth in high school, which I think a lot of young girls are kind of groomed to find their self-worth in, you know, having the hottest boyfriend or getting asked out on dates. And I was just like, I didn't get my period until I was 18. I was like,
blessed.
18.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Blessed.
It was in the middle of orchestra. It was a whole thing. and I didn't have boobs. I just felt very like such a lack of confidence in terms of like how I was how I thought I was supposed to be in high school.
Well, you bring up an interesting point about people getting their confidence from outside sources. Like we're taught that we don't, our self-worth doesn't come from inside of us, which is where it should come from. We're taught that we need to take what other people are telling us about us and molding that into our sense of self. What are some other sources, I think, of insecurity besides boys? Did you find that like advertising, media, television affected your self-confidence negatively? This is for the whole table.
Oh my God. I mean, I looked at that Victoria's Secret like catalog for now two reasons that I think about it. Both because I was like, ooh, this is nice. But also because I was like, why don't I have that body?
Yeah.
I really thought about that. Honestly, not a lesbian, and I would like salivate over the women in the Victoria's Secret model like catalog when I was younger, because it was so, I don't know what it was. Like, I'm like, do I want to kiss you or be you? I don't know. I can't tell. This is confusing. But what instrument did you play when you were in orchestra?
Oh my God, the violin.
Okay, so like this, I feel like when you look at band or orchestra when you were little, do you know many women who played the trombone or the baritone or made a lot of noise?
No.
Or the timpani? You know, maybe there was one percussionist, maybe, but they played the triangle. Like, we played tiny little piccolos, little flutes, and maybe you played a clarinet, but you never played
saxophone
a bassoon.
Sometimes
saxophone. Sometimes.
Are you a saxophone?
No,
I know. You said it with such authority.
Yeah.
Okay. But we tried to be tiny. Yeah. We tried to be small. And I think we felt like, you know, I think when you ask, where do you get that from? It's that everything was telling you, like, don't be loud, gal. You know, that's for the that's for the boys. And that if you're too loud, it's somehow a turnoff in our society. Like, keep
but
it
that's
small.
Like, well, it's so not fair because boys also went through puberty and were also busted. You know what I mean? Like, they go through that process too, and like, you got the pimples, you got the voice crack, you got all that stuff.
The
and
boners
yet,
for no reason
for
all
no
the time.
For no reason, just out. You know what I mean? Which is like so embarrassing and sad for them. That like
that's
their
true.
Arousal is visible, you know? And I mean, and yet they're able to push through that to become, because it does seem like the problem is that this insecurity from adolescence, women tend to keep into adulthood. Where it seems like men, if they had that insecurity in adolescence, were managed to shake it off around 18 and just be like, I'm going to run the world.
Right. Yeah. Well, there are some schools of thought that believe that there's something in the quote unquote, I'm saying with sarcastic air quotes, female brain that leads us to hang on to trauma and the kind of things that caused us pain. Our brains hang on to them longer than boys do, which leads us to be less confident because we wait until we're absolutely positive before we make a move, where boys are more likely to be more risk-taking. Men are more likely to be more risk-taking. We activate our amygdala more easily in response to negative emotional stimuli, which means it's like our fear thing. So,
right. And you know, they ask women like, oh, would you, whenever anybody asks, I was talking to a lot of people in women in film, and they were saying that when you ask men if they, who've never directed before or who've only directed one time, maybe they directed a short or something like that, would you want to direct this feature? The first answer is always yes. Yeah. And when they ask women, it like only 15% of women say yes out of the gate. They all hem and haw, and they're just like, I'm not sure I'm ready.
Yeah.
Ooh, I don't know. You know, now I think it's starting to change. Now I think women are going, yes! And in their minds, they're going, oh, God. Oh, God, what have I done?
Yeah. Well, the same thing is for political office, too. I know a couple people who have drafted women to run for political office, and they said that they have to approach men and women totally differently because every man thinks he should be the president. And most women, if you're like, you should run for office, they're like, ooh, what about my family? What am I ready for this? Am I the right one? Am I doing this? And you, this person who I talked to about this, who drafts people to run for office, said that you have to approach getting people to run for office like getting people to have sex with you. Like, you have to kind of be like, whoa, down boy to all the men. Like, hey, okay, let's slow it down slower than you think this should go. And then with women, you have to be like kind of wine and dine them and make them believe that they're special.
But that, I mean, if you think about it, you know, where does it come from other than from male validation?
Yeah.
It's like when you're sitting in class and you look up and like the pictures of all the presidents are around, there's no women. What message are you getting? What message are you getting as a little girl?
I think it's also from society, like who is allowed to fail.
Yes.
Like the chances that are given to mostly cis white men, you just like you're allowed to fail. And like if you fail, you don't have the burden of your entire demographic weighing on you.
Yeah. You're not the representative.
You're not the representative.
And also like not just that too, but like if you fail, then that means the next brown girl, the next
is not
girl,
a
the next lesbian. It's like,
exactly.
It's like, I don't know. You know, we tried that and it just didn't really hit for us.
Yeah.
So sorry for you.
Sorry
it's
for
like,
you.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, my question is, like, we have all this shit thrown at us. I feel like the world kind of sets out, sees a little girl's like, oh, hell yeah, I'm going to beat this girl to dust. And if you're able to, if you're able to emerge into adulthood only semi-fucked up or with enough confidence to try to work in show business or try to do a difficult career that isn't show business, how do you turn the corner? We all obviously turned some kind of corner.
No,
Michaela, it says that she still has.
I did not.
Do you really?
Not.
Do you really feel like you're not confident? People?
I think I've turned some corners for sure. You know, I think. Okay, first of all, I think our parents do us a service and a disservice when we're younger, and they say, you know, I'm the youngest of three girls, and my dad would always say like, oh, Sarah, she's the this one, you know, she's the smart one or whatever, and Becca, you know, she's the this like the shy one, she's, and we've and you know, or I'm the funny one, and it's like it gave us confidence in this area that you know we sort of probably exploited later on, but. But it really gave us a sort of this weird fixed mindset that we couldn't do these other things, you know? And I know it was sort of meant as like kind of a fun, you know, thing to sort of label as
like
girls
girl
of like, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
We're like, what our superpower was, you know, but it was also, you know, I think it really sort of limited us and minimized us. And it was only, I have to say, I think the biggest way to sort of get confidence is to, I have to continue to do things that are super risky. And if I, as soon as I stop taking risks, you know, like before I do, when I started doing improv, I would literally be almost throwing up backstage and asking myself, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? And then when I kept forcing myself to take that step onto the stage and having no idea if it was going to be a good show or not and still inviting people anyway, you know, eventually I started to go, I have no control over this and it's going to be what it is, but I feel competent at my I feel okay in the unknown enough that I started to have confidence and it started to manifest in all these other little areas of my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
did you ever actually throw up?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Or, you know, or just like empty my bowels. Like
that's my, yeah.
Completely.
Not to jump on and be like, that's my thing.
Diarrhea is my thing, girl, too. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it goes one way or the other.
Naomi, you were saying you never, ever turned the corner confidence-wise. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, that's the thing. Because people assume that because, you know, when someone is a stand-up, it means they're confident. And it's like, I don't know. It's almost like, at best, I can tell you I'm confidently not confident, meaning, like, I'm never going to like myself, but I've kind of decided to just roll with it, if that makes any sense. Like, mm-hmm. I can't be in the active place of constantly beating myself up, but I've definitely learned, especially in the move to L.A., being surrounded by this business, I was like, oh, none of this is handled. Like, I have this project that I'm supposed to be doing now, like a writing project, and I feel like I don't know what I'm doing. And I have not written a single thing in 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. See, now that's a problem, right? Uh-huh. It's one thing to say like, oh, I don't feel like I don't feel good. Mm-hmm. But it's another to then that inability to counteract that feeling with some action. Mm-hmm. And that is how I know I haven't passed it. Like, and so.
Or you're just a writer.
Yeah. I was going to say, you're killing me softly. I have gone through exactly what you're going through and am in a way currently going through it. So this is like so, such a common thing.
And I just went through it.
But it's like, but then it kills me because I'm like, you know, the process of, especially when I've been given this opportunity that I don't think I'm ready for. And so I feel like, okay, whatever this draft is, it better be dope. Mm-hmm. You know, I better come out giving them something so that they don't hire somebody else.
Wow, you just gave yourself a death sentence.
You're the worst. Well, I have not been able to get over it. I think the one thing I have, like, for instance, with stand-up, there's the empirical evidence of someone else's laughter, which is honestly more external validation.
Yeah.
Yep.
But that is the only reason why I know I'm good at that.
Mm-hmm.
Any of the other stuff that takes more of a personal journey, I haven't cracked that code.
Well,
you know
what's interesting? I want to say two things about this person.
Please.
Y'all know Jill Soloway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That created Transparent. I remember Jill saying to me, Jill started walking around differently, where Jill thrust her gut forward and would lead with her pelvis everywhere. And she said, that's my entitlement. That's my belly. That's my belly is my entitlement. You ever see men walk into a room? They lead with their belly. And we, you know, women are always pulling in, sucking in our stomachs and trying to be, you know, and we make ourselves really small. So her physicality was, she started to change, and then it started to completely change the way that she directed all the time, everything and approached everything. Yeah. So it started as a physicality, but the other thing I was going to say is I went to a read through of their last season. They're doing this film, and it was the most moving, and everybody, not a dry eye in the house, and everybody was just crying over the last season of Transparent. And like I said, it's going to be this movie. And I was in the middle of writing, and I threw out twice 20 pages of something. And then I went home. Afterwards, we were all just wept and cried, and our eyes were puffy. Yeah. And I said to Jay Duplass, I said, I don't know what to do with myself right now. Like, it's only 10 a.m., and I've been through the ringer emotionally. And he said, I know. What do? Go get drunk? Take a nap? And I just looked at him, and then I sort of wandered off, and I go, I'm going to go write. And I went home, and I remembered I don't have to follow anybody's rules. I can do whatever I want. I have all the power. Mm-hmm. And I started over and I just nuked everything I had and started over and built from this place because I was so worried that I was going to write something crappy that I couldn't write anything. Mm-hmm. And it was...
Well, and it's an external validation thing. I find that when I write too, and I get too timid about what other people... is this what I'm supposed to do?
Yes.
Like, I feel like I'm doing a dance that somebody else knows the choreography for.
Yes,
but it's a secret to me.
Yeah.
And I have to, like, just... I'm like, do I step here? Do I do this? And I think not being afraid of other people telling you what to do is really important. Tian, same question to you. Have you turned a corner confidence-wise as an adult, as a performer?
I still feel a lot of imposter syndrome in spaces. Mm-hmm. I think specifically I've benefited from being a part of diversity inclusion programs at different points in my career. And they're great for a lot of reasons, but they have also kind of bred this imposter syndrome in me because I'll have folks, well-meaning folks, be like, you're only here because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Yeah. And so it's like it's a constant battle
that
of being...
That sounds like a real well-meaning folk.
I know. You're right. But it's a constant battle of being like, actually, like, these programs are great. They're trying to, like, rectify a long-standing inequality, but also it breeds this idea that, like, you've only gotten there because of this special side thing. So, like, I'm constantly battling the kind of insecurities of, like, I'm only here because they're trying to, like, fill a box versus, mm-hmm. like, I think I can do this and I actually deserve to be here. Mm-hmm. So I'm always working through that.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, I don't do the same type of performing that you ladies do. I basically just get to talk into a microphone and it's my thoughts and it's nothing anybody else wrote down for me. And so I feel very hashtag blessed because of that. So,
but I have a question though, but you do, you know, especially in having the large social media following, mm-hmm. you are also opened up to everybody's thoughts about everything you've said into that microphone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's true.
What, if anything, have you done to fortify yourself in the face of that?
Well, one of the things I've done is just emotionally disconnected from almost everything. So I feel very little. I started my career, Naomi brings up, I started my career working at Jezebel, which was very much a meat grinder for all the writers because we had a super engaged, critical, smart as fuck commenting community. So mm-hmm. pretty much everything you said was going to be opened up to the scrutiny of like an army of grad students all the time. And like they were so smart and so
and
engaged.
People and predisposed to hating Jezebel because it's a feminist.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. There were just knee jerk from all the different directions. Mm-hmm. And there were times when like one time I wrote a piece about how I didn't think selfies were empowering. Mm-hmm. I am like a real curmudgeon about like vanity disguised as feminism. Mm-hmm. And I got shit on for that. That is the thing that I've gotten the most hate for. I mean, there were things that I had missed in the piece that I wrote. There are points about people who are members of communities that are not visible, experiencing visibility by posting pictures mm-hmm. of them, like members of the trans community, for example, disabled people. Those are blind spots for me, and I learned from that. But most of the people that were taking umbrage at things that I said were not members of that community. They just wanted to. So anyway, I basically had to. You only have to deal with a few shitstorms before you just shut that off.
You know, when I got SNL, I went sort of from total obscurity to suddenly it was like announced, you know, mm-hmm. and it was the first time that I got like public opinion. Mm-hmm. And there were things that were just, you know, before I even opened my mouth on the show, people were like, I hate her. And I was like, already? Jesus. Wait, just wait. I'll give you reasons to hate me, but not yet. And, you know, some things said like, you know, I'd fuck her if she got a nose job and stuff. And so it was such a launch of like harshness. But I have to say, once you kind of take those bullets, you're a little bulletproof.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's one thing that I think is a good side of like the online hate that women experience a lot is that, you know, we might be having like troll armies going. All of us are present on social media to one extent or another, or a public to one extent or another. And all of us have probably experienced people being like, I hate you, you're ugly, you should die, whatever. Mm-hmm. But that happens a few times and you're like, bitch, you can't hurt me. You can't hurt me anymore. And so what they've done is like bred this super army of women who can't be hurt. That's what I like to imagine.
Well, actually, then maybe I have turned a corner because I did see a hateful comment. On a Vulture article, Vulture, truly the listeners, the readers live up to their name. And this woman, it was like, it was, you know, I did some podcast and someone was like, Naomi Peregrine is not a good comedian. There are many good comedians. She is not one of them. I don't know why you even have her here. Like, it was like very like that. And it was the first time, I will say, that I was like, that's funny. It's very funny to me to have, you had to go online, create an account, okay? You can't just leave a comment. You got to create an account. You got to get a password going.
Somebody
you put that time
loved
in.
You so much, they took a day.
And it was like, oh, okay, so this is a choice you made to let people know I was trash. And to think like, and also, like, I
good
guess if you,
you
are doing something right, you know, as especially, like, as a comedian, anyone who's out there, like, somebody kind of has to hate you, right? Because that means you're saying something with a point of view or an opinion.
I agree.
And I was like, oh, yeah, so maybe I have turned a little bit of a corner. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I mean, I still think online hate is bad, but I think that's very nice of you to find the silver lining.
That's
a silver lining, girl, because I'm like, I need to stop.
Because anytime I even get anything remote, I'm just like, I'm spiraling for like a whole day and like need to be watching a TV and like offline.
No, I'm not saying it doesn't sting. It didn't silence me. Like, I think for a moment I was like, should I get a nose job? You know, but I have to say, like, after you go to battle the first time, you know, I think I'm not to say that I have no emotion. It's just like, oh, well, there's going to be people who just say shitty things. Yeah. So why should I change anything I'm doing?
And also, like, think about the mindset that you have to be. And this is just to expand it so it's bigger than just being in entertainment or being a public person. But whenever somebody goes out of their way to try to make you feel bad, like you were saying, Naomi, they made the effort to do that. And I always try to imagine, what mindset would I have to be in to do that to somebody?
Right.
Who was it? Like, you know, public figures are one thing. I'll shit on public figures all day. But the
if you're going to make terrible policy that hurt people, I'm going to call you out.
I will call you an unused can of Ready Whip, Ivanka Trump. I don't care. But when I think about the moments in my life when I've like spit the most,
did
like
you just fucking think of that?
No, I wrote that in an article.
God,
about
I was like, I was about
that
to
was
hate
good.
You.
No, I could do like there were spelling bees where you just lined up and like it was like insult bees and you just held up a picture. Mm-hmm. I would win the Scripps National Insult Bee. I would be like, looks like you smell like old cigarettes and your wife left you. But you know, I find
okay,
that when
game
I,
idea.
I find that when I like say the most venomous, mean, poisonous things that are directed at people or the meanest thoughts that I have people, I'm miserable myself.
Yeah.
And so right. I think, you know, it does hurt when people say things that are like really a really well-crafted insult, like one that's like, wow, you know me. Mm-hmm. You know me well enough to say something that would hurt my feelings. Mm-hmm. But when I hear one of those, I think, well, you're also in a bad place mentally. So like I kind of, you can't possibly bring me down to how bad you feel when you said that about me.
Right. So I guess when you ask like, do I have confidence? And I'm like, no, not really. It's because I have imposter syndrome as well, but I think I have confidence in the way that where you would think people would make me feel small and diminished, I kind of, that's the weird thing. Like, that's what I can push through. It's when people I admire and love and I work with them and I'm in a room with them. You know, I surround myself with really powerful, bossy broads. I've always been attracted to them. You know, I used to joke that like we fuck the men that we want to be, for straight women. Like that's like who I would want to take a little piece of them and put it in me and like think that by osmosis,
steal their essence
by having their penis
straight sex
in
is
me.
Crazy.
I could.
Chicks are crazy.
But I think I befriended women who had something I wanted, and I think that thing is like unbelievable confidence. You know, and by being around it, I learned how to advocate for myself, and it doesn't feel comfortable because I think sometimes we're not supposed to take up too much space. Or if somebody gets like, I have watched all of these women, these good friends of mine, at some point in their powerful positions, people, they are so open season for criticism, and they weather it really well in a way that in ways that I'm not sure I would, because it's not coming from, you know, the stupid public who are saying get a nose job. It's coming from other powerful people who are saying, I don't like, you know, mm-hmm. I don't like this or that.
I think that's another aspect of confidence, too, though, is to have the, like, self-esteem to be, like, have humility. Like, I think I've turned the corner in that way, though. Like, I'm confident enough in myself that I'm okay to take criticism from people that I respect and admire, and also to be like, I actually don't know what I'm doing. Can you help me?
Mm-hmm. But I think saying I don't know what I'm doing, to me, like, when I think of the etymology of the word confident or confidence, it means having full trust, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't have full trust in somebody who pretends to know everything.
Yes. Yeah.
I have full trust in somebody who, like all the women directors that we've had, have come out and go, I said, oh, should I do this? And they go, I don't know, try it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I fully trust you, mm-hmm. because then you'll come back and go, nah. And then I go, all right, I believe you.
Yeah, I love the way you work, McKenna.
Okay, everything is just, you know, easy and fine. Sure. So one of the things that I want to go around the table and talk about is, you know, we have a lot of listeners who get in touch who are parents or who kind of connect with the show because they're like, oh, it's women that remind me of my friends and we all get together. If you had to issue a tip to a friend or a parent on how to build confidence in themselves as women or in women that they know, what would be one tip that you would give? I'll start with mine just because I have it at the ready because I formulated the question, I answered it, so I kind of cheated. I got the answer key mm-hmm. in my head. So when I was a kid, I was a late bloomer as well, but I was also in a small town, so I was like a big fish in
as
a
well
town.
We're not late bloomers.
Well,
no, I'm kidding. I'm joking.
I was still waiting.
Oh, right. Yeah. You got your period when you were 25. Yeah.
You're a blessed woman. But I was a late bloomer, and so I was smaller than everybody, and I was a lot more into school than everybody. I was a real fucking dweeb. Mm-hmm. One of the things I really appreciated from my parents was that I don't ever remember my mom and dad singling me out and telling me that I was like, you're pretty, you're beautiful, you're this. They never really commented on my looks. They never really made that a thing mm-hmm. that I focused on. And as a result, I
focus on it now.
Yeah, right. As a result, I'm obsessed with my looks now. My closet is just, it looks like, it's like a costume trunk.
It's an 8-year-old girl's
fantasy land.
I know.
It's just all like feather boas and silken robes. But one thing that I think really helped me was that the compliments that I received from my parents and from members of my family were not based on superficial things. Mm-hmm. They were based on like, Erin, you told a funny joke, or that's a really cool drawing you made, or that paper was great, or that's a really smart comment, or I like that you cleaned your room. It was just about my actions, and mm-hmm. it was about my thoughts and my brain and my personality, and it wasn't about the way I looked. So I didn't grow up hinging my entire self-worth on something that is destined to fade any day now. Any day, it's going to go away. But I'm prepared because I built a personality around other things. So that's my main tip for
people. I just got one. Wow. Okay, I just popped in my head. Yeah, do you mind if I go?
No, please go.
Do you guys have one?
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, all right. This will give you time to think, because that's such a great question. And here's my answer. My parents raised me to be so independent. They didn't do shit for me. I did my own laundry. I was a latchkey kid, so I would prepare meals. And they also, you know, My dad, we went on sabbatical. My dad's a math professor, and we went to France for when I was 14. And I went from this small, trashy town to Paris for a year. And I had to ride 3 subways to get to school. And the first day, my dad took me. We got totally robbed by a pack of people. That was the first day, you know, they just like came in and put their hands in our pockets and whatever. and I had to ride 3 different trains to get to school. My dad rode with me the first day to show me how to do it and never did it again. And then when I realized when I was in high school and college and I would go on a trip with somebody, I would be with people who were inept, who didn't know how to exchange money, who didn't know how to look at a map, who didn't know how to do anything. And it was a drag because I was like, if I didn't know something, I would just figure it out. Mm-hmm. I knew I could figure it out. I knew I could be dropped in any foreign country and figure it out. And mm-hmm. I think more and more, like this is before cell phones, this is before Google. So, you know, when I see kids who are just like, oh, mom, you know, calling their mom for everything or their dad when any kind of adversity comes up. It's just weird to me because I was so hung out to dry. And I can't say, like, thrown in the deep end, but I can't say that, you know, it was comfortable at the time. I had a struggle, but it made me really like fiercely independent as an adult. And I like that about myself.
That's a good one. So throw your kids in the woods and be like, find your way home.
Honestly,
Madison.
You laugh, but my dad has lost us in the woods so many times.
All right. Tan, you want to go?
I think I have one. For me, my confidence has grown because truly as a queer woman who's come out and like finally found herself. Mm-hmm. And so I would just hope that people try to push against any sort of like heteronormative or like very strict gender roles when they're trying to raise their kids. Mm-hmm. And so like I appreciated that my parents on some level really didn't push any of those narratives on me that much. Like they let me play sports and like get dirty and like wear Umbro shorts all the time. And like,
flashback.
I know. I wore Umbros and Sambas like 24/7 and soccer shirts that were like, girls rule, boys drool.
Oh my God. I already have a crush on you. I'm that
girl. I had truly so many of those t-shirts that were like, Jack can play soccer, so can Jill. And
like a lot of no fear.
Yes, like a, like, no yes, like a lot moment. Of no fear, a lot of Adidas, like all day I dream about soccer and it's like a little girl. But like just my parents letting me do that and explore like playing with the boys and like playing soccer and just breaking sort of very strict gender roles and gender expectations, I think allow women and girls to explore the full spectrum of what is possible.
Mm-hmm. That's a great one.
Okay, I think I have one. This is not something I've done, but this is something I truly believe works. I think it's one of the things that I know in the moments that I have done it is physical activity. And I don't mean like, it's not about like your BMI or whatever, but like literally making your body stronger feels so good. Like when you like, you know, and especially one of the things I like to do, and I can't do many, but push-ups. Mm-hmm. Literally just 10 push-ups will make me feel like,
yes,
it's like I can lift my body. You know what I mean? Like the simple ability to like, you know, I want to get into running. I have asthma and I got to like figure out how to run with that. But like one of the things to me is like to literally physically be able to move and to go far and to literally almost that same way of like, not just like the sports thing you were saying, Tien, and like what you were saying, Michaela, about like, you know, being in charge of yourself. Mm-hmm. And there's something to being able to be just physically on top of it. So like whether it's like a dance, a sport, just running, I feel like when I have that physical strength in my body, like I do feel better. Mm-hmm. Like I carry myself taller and I'm like, I can do this.
Yeah.
I can't believe you just brought that up because I watched Creed 2 last weekend because we had a bunch of teenagers at our house and I was like, man, this movie is a little cheesy. But when that Rocky song comes on, I'm like leaping out of my chair, like, get in! Yeah. And I have been such I am like a loose meat sandwich over here. And I signed up for a half marathon. I'm so fucking tired of getting a jar and being like, can you open this for me? I was like, I'm not going to be I can't open this jar of pickles anymore.
Yeah. Well, I have bad news for you. You don't run marathons on your hands. So it's not going to really help you with a pickle jar, but
open it with my thighs.
But Naomi, we can do
that's power.
Amazing.
Wow.
That's confidence.
That is
real confidence, opening a pickle jar with your thighs. Also, Naomi, I'm asthmatic and I've run marathons in distance, so we can talk offline about that if you want to
know how to like do that.
I hardcore agree with you about physical activity being a confidence
booster. I want to do boxing. Like, I want to do that, like, you know, get out of that rage and then get some guns. It's like every time I see like Angela Bassett's arm, like, we can do anything. You know what I mean? It's like, I need that.
Oh, man. This is a great conversation. I'm really sad we have to end it. We have to take a break. And when we come back, the hills will die on.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food. And before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances.
The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is Brian Tyler Cohen, host of the No Lie podcast, which is part of Crooked Media. You've likely seen my videos online or watched me torture Tommy Vitor as part of our series on YouTube. But this week, I've got a really exciting episode. I'm interviewing the 44th president of the United States, Barack Obama. So if you want to tune in and hear what he's got to say, including a definitive answer as to whether or not aliens are real, make sure to listen by searching for No Lie with Brian Tyler Cohen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And we're back with more hysteria. We've reached the part of the show where we take adamant stances on things that don't really matter. It's the hills we'll die on. First, we have a listener hill to get to. Let's roll it.
Hey, hysteria ladies. Here's the hill I'll die on. It drives me nuts when you're sitting around a table with people eating and someone wants to say something, but they have a mouthful of food. So they put their hand in front of their mouth and then proceed to speak with a mouthful of food.
Oh,
that's my hill.
Somebody,
I do that.
I apologize.
I
apologize.
I mean, I respect the hill. I am wrong.
Yeah. I'm wrong too.
We're monsters.
We are.
We are.
We're all chewing with our mouths open watching her die alone on that hill. Like, yeah,
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
That's fair.
Yep. Watching it like a snowblower go into my hair and everything.
Oh, all right, Michaela, you gotta hill you'll die on this week.
Oh, okay. I was just gonna say, if you're a respectable ophthalmologist, don't
go on.
And you know who you are.
Oh my God.
Don't also sell glasses in your office. And I say this because I'm on to you. I'm on to this racket. Like, I understand if you're Pearl Vision Center, okay? People go in there, they get some dinky little prescription, and they're like, I just hooked me up with some glasses right now. But if you, first of all, the eye racket is weird. It's the only doctor you go to where every single time I go, I'm getting worse, not better. Like, I walk in there, and they're not like, oh, good, we've cured your vision. They're always like, I'm sorry, your vision's more terrible. And I'm like, great, I'll see you in 6 months. And I'll come back and I'll be worse off. That's crazy. So when I'm there, they do this thing. I'm on to you. I ask for I don't want to buy your glasses. I want to go get sexy, cool glasses somewhere on Abbot Kinney, probably. I haven't, but it's in my mind that I'm going to. And when I go to your office, you do things like, okay, we dilated you, now go wait in the waiting room. And then there's always somebody that's like, would you like to look at some glasses? No. I'm just here to get find out what my prescription is, because your glasses are stupid expensive. And I'm just here for the eye doctor. I'm not here for the glass. Like, it's not come for the doctor, stay for the glasses. And so just stop. Stop strategically putting me in waiting rooms so I'll like get bored and look at your glasses, which I will inevitably do. And also, when I say, like, can I have my prescription? They're cagey about it.
Oh, yeah.
They don't want
you to know your
I'm
own
like,
yeah.
why don't It's my prescription. Same with blood tests. Sometimes they're real weird about blood tests. It's my fucking blood. Give me my prescription. Tell me how my blood's doing. It's mine, not yours. You already got paid. This is a transactional right. relationship, and we're done. The end.
I think that's fair. I do think it's a racket. I never understood the like need to get my contacts re-prescribed every year. Like, I'm going to overdose on contacts. Unless I'm responsibly, I'm just going to sit there. Oh, no.
Also, why don't they do them together?
Yeah.
Like, you go in for an eye exam for glasses, and he's like, oh, well, test you for contacts. It's like a whole separate production.
Yeah. Oh, well, there's a reason for that, actually.
What's the reason? They can't do it in one sitting?
Oh, no, they can do it in one sitting.
Can.
They mean they're saying you have to come back and do it?
Yes.
Racket.
Okay, that's a racket.
Yeah,
it's a separate appointment.
No. That's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous.
Bull to the shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Bullshit.
You're getting tricked.
We're all getting tricked. We're all getting hosed.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's stop wearing our contacts and glasses out of protest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Insert canned noise of car crashing. All right. Well, that's a good hill, Michaela.
Thank you.
Well, Michaela had to get spirited away, beamed up to Hollywood land because she had a call time. So we're going to finish The Hills We'll Die On, just the three of us. I think we can handle it, right, ladies?
I think we can handle it.
I think we can handle it. Who wants to go next?
I'm confident. We can handle it.
We can handle this.
I'm confident, too. I got so much confidence from that last segment. Naomi, do you want to die on a hill?
Sure. Okay. Now let me explain. Something that I cannot, that I'm like not here for at all, is when people have Instagram accounts of their animals. No, I love that part. When they are speaking as their animals in this made up, not quite English, that is supposed to be the voice of their dog or cat. Okay, look, I am not gonna believe that your animal can type anyway. So if you're going to create this entire caption, it says, Mom says I can has cheese bacon, something where it's like, it's just had a, you are typing. You ain't fooling nobody. Can you please just write in the language you speak as a normal ass human being? Not in this fake animal language.
Oh,
okay?
God.
What is it? What is the ruse? What is the ruse we decided? Was it all because of I can't hash cheeseburger? And then people just went off the rails? Because trust me, you know my Instagram is full of animals. Animals and babies. That's like my one safe space on the internet. But all these captions. Yeah. Of misspelled words and nonsense. We have to stop. We have to stop. I know who it is. And that is the hill I will die on.
That's good. That's good. Maybe the animals are the ones typing their human language captions.
Absolutely not.
Oh my God.
You heard Naomi. Use the King's English when you caption your animal's Instagram.
Whatever
account.
Your native tongue is, just don't try to trick me like your animal learned just enough English to open up an Instagram account into a lengthy ass post about all the walks and food it ate, but not enough to spell words correctly and be grammatically accurate. Get out of here.
All right. I respect that. It never bugged me before, but now it's going to bug me forever.
Oh, my God. It has bugged me, and I couldn't put my finger on it because I have one friend who will, only interact with me through a pet's account. And I'm like, now I know why. It's been bothering me. It's because of this weird language.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That language kills me.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. All right, Tian.
Okay. My hill that I will die on is that I know people have a lot of strong feelings about certain condiments and which ones are the best. I'm here to tell you that A1 steak sauce is the absolute best condiment in the whole world, okay? It should be on the table with ketchup and salt and sugar and pepper as like it.
Oh, sugar.
I mean, you know, when you're at a diner and like it's salt and pepper, sugar, ketchup. A1 steak sauce should also be on there. It goes great on everything. I'm talking meats. I'm talking steak and chicken and rice and pizza. I'm serious.
Pizza!
I put, yes, dip it in your pizza, like dip your pizza in A1 steak sauce. Dip your veggies in A1 steak sauce. It is the absolute, just the original. Don't fuck around with any of the other A1 steak sauce flavors. Just the original A1 steak sauce is the absolute best condiment in the universe.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. That's bold. You're coming in bold like steak sauce. Yes.
Bold like steak sauce.
It's funny. I've not had that in years. Like, I have a vague remember. Like, as you say it, I'm like, that does taste good. But it's not. You're right. It's not part of the public discourse around sauces.
No.
It's not part of the cultural sauce conversation.
I think it isn't. And I think it's gotten unfairly maligned with, like, ranch as something that's down market.
Ranch is trash.
Yeah.
That's but it's,
yeah, no, ranch is A1 steak sauce.
Yeah.
I've had to, like, find friends with and family members with Costco memberships just so that I can benefit from a bulk package of A1 steak.
Can you go through it that fast?
Kind of, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, here's my hill. It's real stupid. underconfident. So here's something. I was watching television the other day. I don't normally watch TV because I'm a millennial and I'm a cord cutter. And so I watch like Netflix or Hulu. And because I now am earning money as a professional writer, wow. I pay for a premium subscription so I don't have to watch ads at all. So I barely ever watch ads on TV. But I was watching regular TV and I saw an ad for a breakfast cereal. And I realized that a common theme for breakfast cereal ads since I was a very small child in the late 80s is that they're always the plot of breakfast cereal ads is always like someone's trying to steal the cereal. Like, why is this why the rabbit is trying to steal the cereal from the kids? The kids are trying to steal the cereal from the leprechaun. Barney and Fred are feuding over the cereal. Like, why is there such a stealing based culture in the world of cereal? And I don't know what my stance is, except I'm deeply concerned that all of the breakfast cereal mascots are involved in some giant theft ring. They're all doing heists constantly. I just think that we need to really take a moment as a nation and examine our cereal morality and put a stop to this. Guys, stealing is wrong.
There's enough for everyone. There's enough for everyone.
There's so much more cereal than produce in grocery. Just, it's fine. We will not run out of cereal for like 50 years. You don't need to steal it. And that's the hill that I'll die on.
That's so true.
It's a theft-based culture. They're always stealing the fucking cereal. Okay, that's all the time we have. The ghost of Michaela, thank you so much for being here. Naomi and Tien, thank you for joining me in the studio. And thanks to Alyssa Master Monaco for joining me over the phone. There will be more hysteria for you next week. I am from another planet. This nation, fuck Janet. But these girls gotta fan it. 1-2-K email and scan it. Don't take no for an answer. Girl with a map that's overdone. Right, cause girls just wanna have fun. So Annie, get your gun. Give them what they want. It will never be enough. You can take what you want from me. Yeah, I'll say it loud and we're gonna shut it down.
If you guys like Pod Save America, please consider subscribing to our Friends of the Pod program. So Friends of the Pod get lots of stuff. You get more Pod Save America. That includes our new show, which is called Pod Save America Only Friends.
It's where Dan gets naked.
Where Dan gets full frontal nudity, but mostly it's a bi-weekly subscription-exclusive podcast that is basically Pod Save America, but behind a paywall. So it's a little bit looser and more fun. And it's Lovett and Favreau and me and Pfeiffer and then other Crooked hosts. We go deeper on the news and cover more stories. You also get Open Tabs, which is a weekly behind-the-scenes newsletter from the show. Plus, you get ad-free episodes of your favorite Crooked podcasts and all kinds of other stuff. Dan will come to your house and clean it once every quarter.
Yeah, clothes.
Dan is very busy, clothes only. But along with just getting great content, becoming a friend of the pod, joining our subscription community is the number one thing you can do to help us grow, to help independent progressive media. So if you've ever thought about doing it, if you ever wanted more Pod Save America, consider going to crooked.com/friends and becoming a friend of the pod.